Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We're going to kind of continue the conversation in some ways that Kathleen had earlier, talking about stars and stargazing. Paul Kinzer, my guest from Galesville, Wisconsin, author of the book Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's published by Cambridge University Press. He owns a business called Seeing Stars. He brings a portable planetarium to schools and libraries to share the night sky during the day. Been a regular on our program for quite a while now. It's great to have him back to talk about that. Well, also with the holiday season here, I'm sure he's got some ideas or thoughts about telescopes, binoculars, equipment maybe for gift giving. And we'll visit with him about that as well. And you can ask him some questions. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Paul Kinzer, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, great. It's good to be here.
What's going on in the winter sky of December?
Well, December, this time of year, comes up on my favorite part of the sky, the deep sky anyway. The constellation Orion is now up by 9 o'clock. And as the month goes on, it'll be rising earlier and earlier, and throughout the winter, you'll be able to see it. It's the brightest constellation in the sky. It's got a beautiful nebula. Nebula is a Latin word for cloud or mist. It's interstellar gas where new stars are forming, and you can see it with the naked eye. You can see it through a telescope, through binoculars. The brightest star in the sky, Sirius, is coming out now. And right now, this year, we're very lucky. The planet Jupiter is in the evening sky as soon as it gets dark. If you look to the south there, the brightest thing in the sky will be the planet Jupiter. And Jupiter, you can see four of its moons through even not very powerful binoculars. And with the smallest scope, you can see detail on Jupiter. And if you get up before dawn, you can see both Saturn and Venus in the sky. And then one really neat thing coming up is the Geminid meteor shower on the night of December 13th. The best viewing will be after midnight. There will be a quarter moon in the sky, and it's kind of bright. So once it sets around midnight, then you'll be able to see lots and lots of meteors. It's one of the better meteor showers of the year, actually.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Dan in Partyville has a question for you, so let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I was on too late to talk to Frank last hour. I have a question about a phenomenon. In mid to late September, the moon comes up, I think it's probably in its second phase, and there's a really bright star or planet that the moon chases. The planet must be about 4 or 5 o'clock in relation to the moon. And now this morning I got up, and the moon's starting to go down, and there's a really bright star or planet chasing the moon at probably 10 o'clock. Do you know what those are, and are they related?
I would say they're not related. The moon moves across a big chunk of sky every night. It just takes 1 month. The word month and moon are related. Mm-hmm. Just a month to go all the way around our sky. So every night it's going to be in a different spot. Mm-hmm. What you saw this morning was the moon near those planets I was just talking about, Saturn and Venus. Saturn is rising at about 2 o'clock right now, and Venus is coming up around 4, and we have a waning crescent moon in the sky. Waning means it's getting smaller every day, and it's getting closer and closer to the sun as the sun is rising. So in the next few days, that moon will not be up in the morning sky. It'll be up in the evening sky, and then it'll be a waxing or growing crescent as it's moving away from the sun.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Dan. And on to Ralph in Slinger. Hi, Ralph.
Good morning, Larry. I have a question about Venus. About 4 weeks ago, I was looking at Venus with my bird-watching scope in the morning, and there was a notch or crescent cut out of it at about 1 and 2 o'clock, sort of a partial eclipse of Venus. Can you tell me what I was looking at?
Well, Venus, just like the moon, shows phases to us. And right now, Venus is in a crescent phase. So if you looked at it with a fairly a higher power telescope, you'd be able to see that it is a crescent, just like a crescent moon. And the reason is because it is between us and the sun. So what we're looking at, where it's dark there, that's the back of it. That's the part of it where the sun is not shining.
So the Earth is causing the eclipse?
No. No, it's not an eclipse. You're just seeing the back of it, and that's how the phases of the moon work, too, when you see a crescent moon shaped like the letter C.
Yeah.
Yet what you're looking at is not, it's in no way anything blocking the light except the moon itself. It's like I say to kids when I teach them, if you're in a movie theater and the movie's in front of you and you're looking at a person who's also in front of you, you see the dark back of their head. Well, it's the same thing with a thin crescent moon. You're seeing the part of the moon where the sun isn't shining. It's nighttime on the moon there. And that's what we're seeing of Venus right now.
I gotcha.
So I'm seeing the part that the sun is shining on.
That's the part that's lit up.
Okay.
And the part that's dark is where it's nighttime on Venus.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, with your questions as we talk with Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And, Paul, I've got a copy of your book, Stargazing Basics, in front of me now, a nice clean copy of it. Talk a bit about the book and what it might do for our listeners.
Well, one of the reasons that I think I'm on today is to talk about equipment that people might want to buy as gifts for people they know are budding astronomers. Often at this time of year, people buy telescopes for their children or for loved ones. And I wrote the book because when I would take out my telescopes and I'd be in a place where the public could look through them, they'd have lots of questions about, well, what should I get? What kind of binoculars or telescopes should I get? That's what led to the book. So the first half of the book is all about what do you need to actually get started in recreational astronomy, in looking at the night sky. And the second half of the book is about, in a very basic way, questions like we just had there. What can you see in the nighttime sky?
And it's written so that any of us can understand.
Sure.
Which is what I like.
Right. I really tried to write it for because when people ask me to recommend a book, for absolute beginners, I couldn't. I didn't know of any that were really written for the absolute beginner that discussed both equipment and the night sky. There are a lot of great books out there, and there are some that do that, but they're not really for beginners. There's a lot of technical jargon that why would anyone know it?
Yeah.
So I have a glossary, a very detailed glossary in the book that explains all sorts of terms, basic and more complex.
Let's turn to Eric in Tomahawk next. Eric, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. What I'm calling about is I seem to remember I was nodding off watching a show, and they were saying how there was going to be sort of a lunar eclipse, I guess, where the moon would look almost like a copper golden color, and then there was some other planets that would be visible with the naked eye, and I thought they said something around the end of December. Am I mistaken, or is there something in that time frame?
Yes, I believe there is late. I don't have the date right here in front of me, but there is going to be a lunar eclipse. Sometimes they're really good to see in the evening. This one is not going to be until the very middle of the night, so you'd have to be up around 2 in the morning, and I do not have the date in front of me.
But it is later December.
Yeah. And you can find that out if you have access to a computer. You can simply Google a search for lunar eclipse 2010. You might want to add North America, and it'll give you exactly what you can see. And then the naked eye planets this month is a good one. Jupiter again is in the evening sky. As soon as it gets dark, if you look to the south, it will be the brightest star in the sky. It's not a star, but it looks just like one. It's just very bright. And again, if you just even a small pair of binoculars, if you look closely and you can hold them steadily or maybe mount them on a tripod, you will be able to see four of Jupiter's moons. And then early in the morning, Saturn is rising, and it's rising earlier every night. And within a couple of months, it will be out in the evening sky as well. And last year, the rings of Saturn were very flat. You couldn't see them. And you can't see these without a telescope. But if you have a telescope this year and you look at Saturn, the rings are widening out again, and they will be widening for the next few years.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Michael in Hillsboro, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Michael.
Thank you for taking my call. Merry Christmas to you all.
To you as well. Yeah.
I have a Christmas-related question. Several years ago, I read a book, and I cannot remember the author's name, but the title of the book was The Star That Astonished the World. And it was an astronomical look at the star that the Magi followed at the birth of Christ. For those that are put off by the religious aspect of it, the guy says right up front that this is not a religious book. It just takes a look at the heavens, and he recreates what it would have been like at the time of Christ's birth. It's a fascinating book, and I'm wondering if you know of the book or of any planetarium presentations based on that book.
I don't know the book you're talking about. There have been several written, and it's actually a fairly controversial topic. There are some people who know a lot about the Magi. Most experts in the field say they were astrologers, that they believed, and it seems fairly clear from the Bible, they believed that what was in the sky would predict what was happening on Earth. And to them, a star, the word star, has become much more specific. At that time, a star could be almost anything in the nighttime sky. And I've read there are people who say it was a comet. There are people who say it was one of the planets. The theory that I am most familiar with, and that seems to be the most accepted by astronomers, is that at that time, there was a conjunction. And a conjunction is when two planets get close together in the sky. And that conjunction was of two of the major planets, and those kinds of happenings were very important to astrologers. And there was more than one, but there's one in particular of, I believe it was Venus and Jupiter, and they think that this may have been it. So that's one theory, and there are others too. Part of the problem is we don't know exactly when Jesus was born. We're not, mm-hmm. We don't have it down even to the year. So there's lots of room for controversy.
Pardon me, but they actually propose a much different date than December,
according to
what the stars would have represented as seen at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating read, The Star That Astonished the World.
Thanks. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate your call. Appreciate it very much. Paul Kinzer of Galesville, Wisconsin, our guest, author of Stargazing Basics. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, Jim Packard with us, and I'm Larry Mueller. Talking stargazing, we're talking binoculars, we're talking telescopes today with Paul Kinzer of Galesville, Wisconsin, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, published by Cambridge University Press. And you can join us with a question of your own, and it could be about stars, it could be about binoculars, it could be about telescopes. Maybe you own one, maybe you don't want to get one. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. And, Paul, we have an email from Todd who says, could you give me a primer on an affordable pair of binoculars for the occasional eagle bird and wildlife viewer? Mine just don't cut it when viewing eagles along the Wisconsin River. And I expect that if you can find a good one for eagles, you might find a good one for stars.
Since I'm here to talk about the stars, I will definitely talk about a pair that might be good for both. Binoculars are always labeled with two numbers. The common examples are 7x35 or 7x50 or 10x50. And the first number is the magnification. That's how big things are going to look. And then the second number is the diameter of the bigger lens, the objective lens, the lens you aim at the object. And I'm going to recommend as an inexpensive and yet very, very good pair of binoculars, 10 by 50s. That means they magnify things 10 times and the diameter is 50 millimeters. That will let in a lot of light. 50 millimeter binoculars will show you twice as much light as 35 millimeter binoculars. And magnifying 10 times brings things in. You can get some that are even bigger than that, but they're much harder to hold steady because they're heavier. And the more you magnify, the more the shaking shows. So that's a very basic answer to that.
10 by 50s. Okay. Yes. Rose and Nasita, we turn to you. Hi, Rose.
Hi. I just happened to be up at 4:44 this morning and looked in the east. I saw the moon, the crescent moon, but what was the planet? Was it Saturn or Venus?
Well, they were actually both there. Venus would have been the brighter one. Saturn might not have been as noticeable. Saturn, it's always bright, but it isn't brighter than some of the nearby stars. Venus is very bright right now, so that's probably, if you only noticed one, it would have been Venus. And right now, Venus is rising right around 4 o'clock.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Sean in Muskego, we are on to you. Hi, Sean.
Hi. I have a question. I purchased a telescope secondhand, and it didn't have any counterweights. And I've looked everywhere. I've looked at the manufacturer. I've looked at sort of different astronomy stores, and I was wondering if you knew anywhere where I could find the counterweights for my telescope, and I guess that's just my question.
Okay. Well, there are lots of places online where you can do that. I'll tell you, if you're on a real tight budget, what I have done with telescopes where I have not had a counterweight is I used a weight from a barbell. And
okay.
The problem with those is that they can slide up and down. You can't really lock them, so you're limited in that way. But that's an idea, and the holes on them are typically bigger than the counterweight bar, but you can just buy a big washer and stick it on there. That's one idea. Orion telescopes online, Orion telescopes and binoculars. Sometimes you won't actually see it on their website, but if you just do a search for them and get their phone number, you might call them, because they often they have so many different things and they have so many different mounts that they might have something that will work for you.
Okay.
All right.
Orion telescopes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And going back to the eclipse of the moon, got an email from Jeff. Who says, this is the email I sent out to my 4-H astronomy kids about the December eclipse, and it's December 21st, the first day of winter. Astronomical salute to the solstice. There will be a total eclipse of the moon. The Earth's shadow will cover the full moon. You will have to get up pretty early in the morning. Maximum totality is 2:17 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
One of the extra nifty things about this eclipse is that the moon will be less than half a degree away from M1, the Crab Nebula. Any good photo of the eclipse will probably also show that as well. And
okay,
about the Crab Nebula?
Well, I should say that that might be true. However, the Crab Nebula is tiny compared to the moon in the sky. I'm sure there will be some amazing photographs taken through telescopes that will show possibly a part of the moon and the Crab Nebula. But but the interesting thing too is usually the moon is far, far, far brighter. But this is supposed to be a fairly dark eclipse.
Nebula is about 6,500 light years away.
Yes, yes. And it's where a star blew up, a supernova seen hundreds of years ago.
So it's December 21st,
yeah.
And for the best time, it's 2:21 or something?
2:17.
2:17 in the morning.
Of course, that's the longest night of the year, so there'll be plenty to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Molly in Grand Marais, Minnesota. Let's go to you now. Hi, Molly.
Hi. What a wonderful show, and thank you. I'm certainly going to get the book. I'm interested also, besides in the astronomy aspects, in terms of binoculars, because I teach birding classes, and I also take naturalist types of hikes with people, that there's one aspect that you wouldn't be interested in, but if somebody's looking for a pair of binoculars to do a lot of things, they need a close focus. And that's because if you're looking at bugs or butterflies or dragonflies or anything like that, you do need that close focus. So besides weight and all those other aspects, I think that's, if someone's trying to buy one pair of binoculars,
yes,
kind of something to think about. But thank you so much.
All right, thanks
and,
for calling.
And I do agree with that, and that's something you should check out. Just another comment on binoculars, something that I highly recommend is, don't buy them mail order, because one of the most important things is basically binoculars are two telescopes and you put them up to your eyes and they have to be lined up perfectly. And I bought a pair online and they weren't lined up at all. And they're useless if they're not lined up. They give you headaches and you see two things. Close focus in if you're buying binoculars for astronomy, if you buy them from an astronomy store, they usually don't care about close focus because usually you're going to be focused at infinity. But that's certainly true if you're buying multi-purpose binoculars. You want to hold them up to your eyes and really try them out.
All right.
Careful for children, too, because a lot of binoculars won't close tight enough to allow their eyes to see. So, I mean, a lot of people make the mistake of buying binoculars that just kids can't use.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, try them out. Bring the kid.
Yeah.
Try them out at the store. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you, Molly.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, by the way, with your question at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org. Jim Packer just reminded me that Jim Lattice and Tom Hall are going to be on Monday, the 20th of December, to talk about that celestial event on the 21st. So thanks, Jim, for reminding me of that. Courtney emailed, what would you recommend as a good beginner's telescope?
Okay, well, I spend many pages in the book on that. I have to say, like I often do, it depends. It depends on partially on where you live and where you're going to observe. If you're going to be in a big city, that might affect things. But in a general way, I would say you want an aperture. Aperture is the diameter of the main light-gathering surface. Some telescopes use mirrors, some use lenses. You want an aperture, I would say, of at least 80 millimeters. That's about getting close to 3 inches, because anything smaller than that, and I feel like you should just get a pair of binoculars. So that's first. And second, you want to make sure that the mount that it comes on is sturdy enough that it will be steady. Because if you get a telescope on a mount that isn't sturdy, it tells you two things. First of all, it's going to be really hard to use. And secondly, it's probably really cheaply made. So, again, if you don't know what you're doing, I would recommend trying your best to, if not be able to try the one you're actually going to buy, go to a store and check out different models. And then if you do order online, which is what most people do, because it's kind of hard to find the telescope they're looking for at the price they're looking for in a store, if you find something close, that'll help you do research. I would say the kind of telescope for an absolute beginner that I would recommend is a refractor. That's the classic telescope that has a big lens at one end and you put eyepieces at the other. It's just the easiest for a real beginner to use. And other people would disagree. They say go for a reflector. It's cheaper per aperture. You can get a bigger one for the price. But there's a definite learning curve in using those.
All right, on to Julia in Appleton. Hi, Julia.
Yes, hi. He partially answered my question. However, I am interested in knowing where I can buy a telescope for a six-year-old to start using. I want to introduce my daughter to just the whole issue of looking at the stars and learning about that. Any recommendations, please?
Well, for a six-year-old, It's kind of tough. I would say, again, buying a telescope as a first way of getting into astronomy, I might not recommend that. Going out and looking at the night sky with nothing at all is a good way to start and learning the constellations. But if you really want to get a telescope, an idea for a little kid might be a spotting scope, a telescope with a built-in eyepiece, a zoom eyepiece, where you can change the magnification, because it will give you enough magnification that you'll be able to see craters on the moon and the moons of Jupiter and possibly the rings of Saturn. And it will also be very, very easy to use. You won't have to spend a lot of time setting it up. You just put it on a regular tripod and use it. And the other nice thing about them is you can get them in a lot more places than you can get astronomical telescopes. But that's just one idea.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Ron, in Rome. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Rome, Wisconsin.
Yes.
I've been into, I'm always interested in astronomy. And I've been trying to, over the years, I've been watching these, telescopes. I keep thinking this Orion, but they sell them, they're small, maybe 12, 14 inches tall, 6-inch apertures that you can sit on a table. They actually will follow the night sky. You can lock onto something, you can program them. And I'm wondering, how well those things work. They're about $400 or $500, and you can hook a computer program into them, or actually wire it to your computer, so you don't have to sit outside. You can set your computer on a card table out your front porch and run it into your computer and watch, on your computer screen, or take, like long pictures and stuff of things that are far away.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, you're probably talking about either the type of telescope is a Schmidt Cassegrain or a Maksutov Cassegrain. That people just call it a Mac. And yes, they use both lenses and mirrors. Those kinds of telescopes, what they do is they're in a very short package, and sort of like a pair of binoculars, the image bounces back and forth, so you can fit a powerful telescope in a small tube. They can give very good images. There is definitely a pretty high learning curve in figuring out how to use those computers and getting them to work well. But if you, especially if you want to look at planets and other things that are fairly small in the sky, they can be really great. They're not as good for wide field viewing. But there are a lot of people who really do enjoy them, and the computers in them get better and better every year.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Bob in Wauwatosa, we're on to you now. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. I've got a question about binoculars also. I have a pair of 7x50s that are good for night viewing, but my wife and I need something smaller and lighter for all-around use, especially hiking and camping. So I'm looking at probably the old reliable 7x35 size, but I've got two questions. First one is there any advantage one way or the other between the poro prism type of binocular or the roof prism type? And my second question is what technical evaluations can I make at the store? I know about collimation. The collimation on my old 7x50s is just great. And I've seen some binoculars where it's horrible. But is there anything else besides collimation that I can check at the store? And I'll take my answers off the air.
All right.
Okay. Well, I'm not a real expert on optics, but the big difference between the two kind of prisms, the more classical shaped binoculars, those prisms are much cheaper to make well. The binoculars where the tubes are straight, those prisms, they come in the cheapest binoculars, but they're not made as well. So unless you're willing to invest a fair amount of money, I would not recommend those. And I don't know that they give particularly better views. They can be lighter weight, but especially for the price, I don't think you're going to gain anything. One thing I have read is if you hold them a little ways away from your eyes, you'll know you're getting a high quality optic. if the image you see is still circular, if you can start to see the shape of the prism, then my reading has told me that they're using prisms that are really too small to gather all the light.
So like 6 inches away or so?
Oh, maybe even a little further. If you just move them away from your eye, six to eight to ten, I suppose. And I haven't read everywhere that that's that big a deal, but that would be one thing you could check too.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And Matt in Spooner, we're on to you. Hi, Matt.
Good morning. I got a couple questions. I'll start with the shortest first. The brightest star in the Orion constellation, is that pronounced Betelgeuse?
Yeah, it's Betelgeuse. There are people who say Betelgeuse, Betelgeuse, but the most commonly used pronunciation is Betelgeuse. And it's actually not the brightest star in Orion. Rigel is.
Rigel is? Okay.
Yeah. And Betelgeuse is a variable star, so its brightness can change, but at least for me, not enough to really tell.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's the orange one. It's the left shoulder.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've tried and tried again to locate the Andromeda Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a heck of a time. Not seeing anything ever. I mean, I've looked at it through binoculars, and I don't know if I'm really looking in the right spot.
Well, do you have dark skies? Can you see the Milky Way?
Yes.
Okay, then you should be able to find it. And one way is, if you know the constellation Cassiopeia the Queen, it's the W-shaped constellation.
Yes.
Yeah. And just for folks who don't, it's on the opposite side of the North Star from the Big Dipper. If you use the more triangular triangle, the one that's less flat,
okay,
use that as an arrowhead.
Okay.
And go away from the North Star using that triangle as an arrowhead. If you sweep with binoculars away from there slowly, you should go right to the Andromeda Galaxy. It should end up in your binocular field.
Okay. I guess what I was doing was I was going off of Perseus, and I guess I'd be following it to the to the west, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
And I can't see it in my head right now, but that's what I always do to find it in binoculars. I use that triangle.
Okay,
of Cassiopeia.
So I'd be facing towards, like, the east. I'd be looking at Cassiopeia,
mm-hmm.
and I would be moving more towards the south, going from the North Star right through the shallow arrow of.
Do you want to go through the deeper one? Not the flat triangle, the other triangle.
Okay, and mm-hmm. then I follow that, and I would be going towards the south, right?
Not necessarily. It all depends on where, you know, the North Star, where Cassiopeia is in the sky. You're going away from the North Star, but that's not always south, weirdly enough.
Okay. Would it be? I get them screwed up. I got to turn everything upside down.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing, is it, Matt?
No.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. You've got another way to look now, and so give it a try and see what you come up with. Dan in Campbellsport, on to you. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, good morning. Recently I sort of upgraded my equipment a little bit. I ended up purchasing a Zamel 10-inch Dobsonian reflector.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're well aware of, there's a little bit of tuning up involved in collimations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always sort of left wondering whether I'm getting the optimum performance out of my optics. And I guess that leads to my question. I'm just wondering, do you know of any astronomy clubs or you yourself that holds any kind of stargazing parties or anything like that that's open to the public maybe would be willing to help out someone like myself who's got a newer scope like this and is, you know, looking for some experienced people to come in and maybe help, you know, make sure that I'm getting everything collimated properly. Anything like that would possibly open to the public.
Right. Well, I know mine, the La Crosse Astronomical Society. I would say any astronomy club will be glad to do that. Mine has its own website and Yahoo group, and others do too. If you contact virtually any astronomy club, there will... I can't understand why there wouldn't be someone in there who would love to help you do that, because we're all very enthusiastic about what we do. So if you do an online, do some online research for the one nearest you, many of them have monthly stargazing, and they welcome people to bring their scopes.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
What's your website, by the way, for that?
My website is seeingstars, W-I, all one word, .wordpress.com. And it talks about the book, and it talks about my business where I go to schools with the planetarium and other things. And it's got some astrophotos I've taken, too.
And let's talk a little bit about your planetarium. You had a portable planetarium that you take around to schools and libraries. Talk about what you do.
Well, it's called a Star Lab Portable Planetarium. It's a 16-foot across by 10-foot high dome held up by air from a fan. And in the middle of it, in pitch darkness, I have a projector that projects the night sky onto the inside of that dome, and groups of up to 35 kids or adults, not quite as many adults, go inside. They crawl through a tunnel, and I teach them about the night sky.
And you do that around Wisconsin?
I do. I've gone to Minnesota, Illinois, wherever you're willing to pay the mileage, I'll come.
All right. And again, people can find out more about that at Seeing Stars WI. So Seeing Stars WI is all one word.
Yeah.
.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just see if Sandy in Rhinelander has a question for you. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I was just wondering, earlier in the show you mentioned a spotter scope.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that and where I could find one?
Well, spotting scopes are they're telescopes that are meant to be one unit. Some of them have eyepieces that you can remove and put other ones on, but for the most part, they are sort of like half of a pair of binoculars. They have a prism in them, so they're smaller. Camera stores often sell them, and they're mostly used for people for birding and nature study. But they are good for basic astronomy. You're not going to be able to magnify as much, but a good one made by Nikon or other makers will give very, very sharp views.
Yeah, very sharp. I have a spotter scope, and it's, among other things, lots of binoculars, spotter scope, telescope, and the spotter scope's kind of fun to use once in a while. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's handy to use. Sandy, thank you for calling. And Paul, thank you so much. It's always a great pleasure. Again, your book is titled Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's published by Cambridge University Press, so it could probably be any bookstore.
Anywhere that can order books. It's not always on the shelf, but Amazon, any of those places too.
And any of your local bookstores can certainly order it. Stargazing Basics, Paul Kinzer, our guest today. And you know what? I bet he'll come back and be with us again, won't you?
Well, I hope so.
I hope so too. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to here we are, the holiday season, and the holiday season often brings consumer complaints. Of course, actually, I guess we get consumer complaints 12 months of the year. Janet Jenkins can tell us some more about that. She's an administrator in the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Bureau of Consumer Protection. She's our guest next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.